Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded the 13th day of August 2010. Well, USDA steps up and dramatically cuts black seaweed out. What does it mean any more to the market than has already happened? We'll ask these and many more questions today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Ray Jenkins of Cargill out of Eddyville, Iowa. Our panelists in studio today include Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities from Normal, Illinois, Aaron Curtis of Mitco out of Normal, Illinois, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from Crawfordsville, Indiana.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, Wayne Nelson, USDA, on Thursday morning of this week said, hey, we think they're right. There is a drought in Russia, and we think it's worth at least 15% of their crop. Do you think they were right? And how much more does it mean to the marketplace than's already been built in?
Well, Todd, I think that it is right. I think there is some real problems over there. They're talking about a 130-year drought. We're talking about forest fires ravaging all over. I think the biggest thing is not so much this 15%. It's what percentage doesn't germinate well if it gets planted as far as the fall, the wheat that will be planted in the next month. And I think also it is how much of the business that was there that isn't going to be there will come to the U.S. in the form of wheat and corn exports.
Aaron Curtis of Midco.
Well, I think it's going to be interesting to see how much of this demand shift we do see shift to the United States. I think especially if we see some better weather here in Russia, at least get some a little bit of rain here in the next couple of weeks. I think, you know, some of the Russian officials here the last couple of days at least, you know, not quite ready to commit as they were here a week or two ago on really shutting off exports here at the end of the year. So it'll be interesting if some of that export market continues to shift through. But, you know, we did see the USDA adjust up wheat exports yesterday and corn exports. So I think that perception is that some of that business is going to flow this way. And I think we've kind of shifted this market a little bit more to a demand focus, and that's kind of been the preface of the rally here the last couple of days, and it's going to be interesting to see here as we head into the fall.
A couple of things. Thank you for driving in today. This is your first time as a panelist. You've always been a guest on the program. We do appreciate you moving up to panelist and sitting in the studio with you, and I put you in the wrong city. You're actually in Bloomington and not in Normal. On the other hand, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities is in Normal, Illinois. Your answer to the question, Kurt?
We've probably got some room to come down a little bit more. It's a tough one to figure. The key is the world supply-demand balance sheet on ending stocks. In order to get real bullish and get tight as we were in the 2007-2008 rally, we've got to lose another 50 million metric tons on ending stocks on the world scale to get real bullish. But the bullish thing is two things. One is the Black Sea wheat market is the Walmart to the world, and you have the tendency to go there at discount prices. The rest of the trade is going to have to pay up and buy wheat from the other countries in the world. Then, as was hinted on earlier, we're trading dry weather already in the next year.
What makes it the Walmart of the world? I've heard that said a couple of times, but why would the price there be any different than any place else?
They have the tendency to you know, have the blue light special from the Kmart side to logistics out of that Black Sea area to the European countries. And it's just the competitive market. Also, too, there's some currency issues involved and so forth. But the tendency is to go there.
Kurt touched on it there, Todd. I think number one, its freight rates also help keep the price a lot cheaper coming out of there. Number two, most of the world doesn't like us. And number three, they are in a more of a bind. After the Soviet Union split apart, a lot of your different areas there did want some good cash flow coming into their country, and they were very aggressive on selling.
It was a pretty wild market in the wheat over the last several weeks. This week, we had a high price in the nearby soft red September contract at $7.38 and a quarter. The low was at $6.80 and a half. Settlement price was down 23 and a quarter at $7.02 and a half. July, though, of next year at $7.12, up 9 cents. There will be many that are considering wheat as a possibility, especially in southern Indiana, southern Illinois. Should they, and if they do, do they need to make a sale?
Both cases, yes, Todd. I think if they listened to the afternoon program when you were on, that they said that wheat and double crop beans made the most money of any crop. So we definitely think they should be considering it. Number two, yes, we do think that they should be locking something in here. It might go higher, but I think at least have part of it. And the third thing they should be doing is checking to see if they can get some wheat seed real soon because it is tight.
Yeah, and that came in a Friday afternoon program. I was talking to Gary Schnitke. You can go back to our website at willag.org and listen to it. It's in the second part of the program, so it's 30 minutes in. Or you can simply go to the Farm Doc website, and it's the podcast, and you can read what he has to say about the crop projections and budgets. Those are for the state of Illinois. And he does talk about doing double crop, and that makes sense if you double crop wheat and soybeans. But otherwise, it doesn't make sense. You've got to have the soybeans behind the wheat in order to make that happen. What do you think about wheat as a soft bread for farmers in the southern part of Illinois?
Yeah, I think we'll see some increase. The question is going to be whether or not we can get that back to those 2008 numbers. Looks like the fall is going to cooperate. You know, going to start some harvest in southern Illinois next week. So that shouldn't be a problem this year compared to what we saw last year. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, there continue to be disease issues in wheat. Farmers continue to be frustrated with growing wheat, especially as you move farther into as you move farther up Illinois. So it's going to be interesting, but I don't know if we'll quite get back to those 2008 levels we saw as far as wheat planted acres.
You've been able to divine anything out of the Black Sea area, out of Russia, and whether they're going to have much of a problem with the meteorologist you're talking to, I'm suggesting, in putting next year's hard red winter wheat crop in or winter wheat crop in, because they've got most of the harvest or should be in the midst of harvest and getting closer to done there. I think they harvest from end of July to about the end of August, so then they'll come back in September and start thinking about putting a crop in the ground.
Yeah, we've got meteorologists talking about some potential wet weather this next week, but it's just a matter of, you know, if it recharges and gives the crop enough vigor here to get started before winter sets in. So that's what the trade's going to look at. But two, they're going to focus on the southern hemisphere. Western Australia remains dry, so there's still problem in other areas of the world too they'll watch. As far as the producer goes, $8, that's probably a good hedge because the elevator is going to be difficult to deal with. You figure a dollar basis there and a dollar dock, you're down to $6. That's not too bad.
Not too bad. Hey, substitution, corn for wheat around the world as a feed substitution. Can we really move it out of the U.S. and into other places for substitution?
If we widen the spread on out in the big rally when wheat took off, Minneapolis went to 28 and Chicago and Kansas City went to 14, 15, 16 bucks. The wheat was 550 over corn. You know, you spread that one out to that level, corn's going to look attractive on the world market.
Here are some of the numbers in the corn pit. September contract this week had a high of $4.14. The low is at $3.90 and a half. Settlement price up 6 3/4 at $4.11 3/4. December at $4.27 and a quarter, up 7 1/4. USDA says biggest crop ever. Harvest at 3.433 billion bushels, or rather at 13.365 billion bushels. The 3.43 is the soybeans. 165 bushel to the acre yield. You think they're right, and what are we doing with this market and with corn at this point and the weather conditions we've had? We've had more hot weather, I think, in this part of the world than we've had for a very long time.
Since about 1988, Todd. But the one thing is, yes, I think they were right. Remember, this was done as of August 1st. I think that the way that there's statistics were taken and put together, that is the right figure. I also think that we've had extremely warm temperatures, rapidly maturing corn that generally hits a little bit in the test weight. And I think that that'll be the highest yield that we'll probably see for this fall as far as things go. And I do think it will come down. Were they right at the time they did it? Yes. should there be some adjustments taken? Yes. And that's the way that the trade felt, and that's why they acted towards that way. We also saw that they didn't think the trade was right on how they'd put the exports because they were being a lot more optimistic. I also thought the USDA was probably close to where we should be at this time. We don't know that we're going to pick up all the extra business or that Russia won't turn around in 2 months and say, yes, we're going to start selling wheat.
Did you like the numbers that they came out with, 165 on the yield at that point, and what do you think it is now?
Well, the question I had, I guess, was some of the eastern Corn Belt states. You know, they had Illinois up to 180, which would be a record or tied a record crop.
That's
Indiana,
right.
Ohio up a couple too, or on the yield anyway. And we knew all about the western Corn Belt as far as how good stuff were. The question has always been in the eastern Corn Belt. So maybe a bit of doubt if that yields out there, especially with some of the rain or some of the weather we've seen since then. But I agree with Wayne that, you know, it is what it is based on what the USDA said is at August 1st, and we'll see where we go from there.
No way 180 in Illinois. It's going to be a tough cookie. We've got some early surveys going around, 125 to 200. A lot of guys expecting 220 coming in 180. So it's going to be a variable here. I think we're probably more as in this 162 level.
I only heard whispers of this. The McLean County folks go out. That's the biggest corn-producing state or county in the state. Did you hear about them going out and taking a look and not finding what USDA found? Did anybody hear that one? I only heard a little whisper about that. Maybe we'll check and see whether we can come up. McLean County is, of course, Normal and Bloomington and your area. I thought maybe you might have heard that. But we'll check and we'll talk about it next week and see what those numbers look like. So let's turn our attention to the bean market. This week, a high of $10.81, a low of $10.33¾. In the August contract, settlement price was at $10.52. Down 7 cents. November beans at $10.44 were up 10.5. Again, a record crop there, 3.433 billion bushels on a 44 bushel to the acre yield. Beans are an August crop. It's not been very pretty, I don't think, anywhere across the Midwest for soybeans.
Been awfully hot. A lot of talk about dropping some blooms or pods not wanting to fill, especially if we don't get some rain this weekend down across the Delta and the lower Midwest, southern Midwest, lower Indiana, lower Illinois, Kentucky, and those areas. You know, we've heard of small amounts of SDS, but I think that's no more than usual. The question will be, can we get one of these rains that's forecast for next week? The cooler temperatures, 80, 85, isn't my idea real cool, but it will help a bunch if we don't get up in that 95 plus bracket every day.
Across the board, and maybe I poll everybody, do you want to be bullish or bearish the crops, corn and beans?
Do I want to be bullish or bearish, or am I bullish or bearish? You're asking what position most of my traders have.
Okay.
I think that we have to be cautiously optimistic towards price appreciation here.
As I think you got to define yourself as a trader or a risk manager. As a trader, the trend's up and the market's going to go higher. There's no question about that. But as a risk manager, as a producer, we got to look at opportunities and take advantage of them. For example, 450 December corn futures, that's the highest we've been in the last 2 years. That's the upper end of the range. So you got to take advantage of that. Same thing on beans. It's 1050 areas. That's the highest we've been in the last 2 years. So I think you got to cash a few in.
Yeah, I agree. From a hedge standpoint, you got to be taking advantage of some of these opportunities. But if demand continues to stay strong, we could very well move the trading side of the market up a little bit. You know, we continue to see the funds very long here. The seasonal suggests we move a little lower here to the end of August into harvest. So we'll see what the funds want to do. Do they want to give up the ghost here a little bit or step up into defend? But right now, you got to think that we work a little higher.
Speaking of the funds, maybe you can talk a little bit about this because they've been playing really big into the wheat market. But there are days that they've been really big in the wheat market, and there's not much changed at the end of the day other than there was a huge change from top to bottom in the range.
We had the largest one-day amount of contracts traded on last Friday, but only at the end of the day, 368 contracts differential in what the open interest was from the day before. So that's about half of the U.S. crop traded in one day with a trade of 368 contracts differential, more long or short than there were the day before. So the funds have really been active traders.
And does it only really – what purpose does it serve, I suppose, because you're moving the market volatility so much? The liquidity, I suppose, is there, but you blow a lot of people out of the – a lot of little guys out of the marketplace.
The volatility is just about not worth what the liquidity is for a small trader or hedger along the way.
Yeah, and I think this goes back to what we saw here a couple of years ago when we talked about some of the regulations going on in the industry and whether or not the funds are playing by some of the same rules that the rest of us have. So I think they're market or at least the governing body is going to continue to look at that and see what role the fund's going to have in this thing.
Well, it just goes back to having a plan. If you're a trader, you got to have a plan, stick to it. If you're a hedger, you got to have a good banker to back those hedges. But there's ways to be in the marketplace with some option strategies to manage some of that risk.
This afternoon, we're talking about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Aaron Curtis is with Midco out of Normal, Illinois. And Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in Crawfordsville, Indiana. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. In just a couple minutes, we'll return and talk with Ray Jenkins at Cargill in Eddyville, Iowa.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. After a pleasant weekend last week, this week was an uncomfortably hot and humid one across the state of Illinois. High temperatures reached the upper 90s and even topped the 100-degree mark in far southern Illinois and climbed into the mid-90s in central Illinois. In the far north, temperatures just reached 90 most of the week. Average daily temperatures this week were 5 to 8 degrees above normal. Compounding the heat were dew points that rebounded back into the mid and upper 70s across the state, making for dangerously high heat indices. Only northwestern Illinois received significant precipitation this week, as the storms associated with the ones that flooded Ames, Iowa, rained out over Illinois. Across the remainder of the state, showers and thunderstorms were widely scattered to non-existent. Heavy thunderstorms on Thursday did dump 1 or more inches of rain on parts of southwestern Illinois, but that was somewhat localized. A series of cold fronts will finally sweep away the heat and humidity for an extended period. The edge will be taken off the heat on Sunday as the cool air begins to move through Illinois, but the real push of cooler and drier air will come later on Sunday, and most of next week temperatures will be near to perhaps even slightly below normal. The push of cold air will be accompanied by some thunderstorms this weekend, after which most of the week should be dry. The only exception may be some widely scattered showers that will develop in far northern Illinois the middle of the week. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on the 13th day of August 2010. I'm your host, Todd Gleason, from University of Illinois Extension. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. In studio with us, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Aaron Curtis of Midco from Bloomington, Illinois, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Ray Jenkins is with us. He's at Cargill in Eddyville, Iowa. Mr. Jenkins, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon. Hey, you've got a lot of rain there. Tell me about conditions in your part of the world and where Eddyville actually is in the great state of Iowa.
Well, thanks for inviting me on the show again. Eddyville is located about 75 miles southeast of Des Moines, right on the Des Moines River, and it's been another exciting week here in our part of the world. We've had successive nightly rainfalls, 3 nights in a row earlier in the week of 3 to 5 inches, not too far north of us, and that's pushed a lot of flooding this direction, and we're also have to deal with what the Corps of Engineers does with two of the big flood control reservoirs up in central Iowa on either side of Des Moines. So we've been in major flood conditions in early July, and we've been in that situation again this week, but fortunately things are improving fairly rapidly as we end the week.
Just a quick question. Did you lose much acreage because of the floods? And then along with that, looking at the government report, do you agree with the yield and the production they give Iowa?
We're going to lose some crop There's two branches of the Skunk River that start up by Ames and work their way down on the east side of Des Moines into southeast Iowa. There's going to be record flooding in some of those Skunk River bottoms, and there were quite a few levees that have actually been overtopped or breached. So there's going to be water either trapped or sitting in some of this corn that was previously reasonably good. And then a lot of smaller streams just went crazy, and we're seeing damage out there. So, you know, I don't know if I had to put a number on it, 1% to 2% of the Iowa corn crop damaged here this week in a 10 or 20 county area.
Ray, we're running 4 to 6 weeks ahead of our harvest should be 4 to 6 weeks ahead of last year, probably 2 to 3 weeks ahead of normal. Where do you put in your harvest anticipation here as we move into the end of August and into September?
I would think we'll be not as far ahead as Illinois, but we're anticipating a round of corn harvest here between the 15th and the 30th of September, more likely in the 20th to the 30th of September, and then there'll be a bean harvest and then back on the corn. But we're definitely advancing here pretty quickly.
Ray, on the yield projections USDA put out, are they a little high, a little low?
Well, you know, the thing that caught my eye is I jotted down several state production numbers. I noted Indiana and Ohio at 176 and the Illinois at 180 and Nebraska at 180, and then Iowa's at 179. And you would have thought if this was a semi-normal growing season that we'd had with the rest of them, that Iowa number would have been up in the mid-180s. What we're really seeing is great disparity across the state in production possibilities. The Northwest Crop District, a huge producer up there, is actually projected at a bushel higher than last year at 196, while down here in the South Central District, 30 bushels under last year's yield because of all this excessive moisture. I think Iowa's still got a little room to drop, maybe down into the mid-170s.
Just as a reminder to folks, when USDA came out with those numbers on Thursday morning, they do give state averages, and they have new record corn yields in Washington State, in North Dakota, in Nebraska, in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Illinois, Michigan, Indiana, and Iowa, Ohio, but not in Iowa. So there are a number of states that they're actually expecting really big yields in. And then I want to turn to another part of your job, I suppose, at this point. Remind us, and I think you have an ethanol plant, but I don't recall whether that's correct or not there at Eddyville.
Ethanol is a small piece of our business here. It's only about 15% of our corn. We're primarily a sweetener business here, and then we're several across-the-fence customers that are located next to us. We consume about 90 million bushels of corn per year here at the Eddyville plant.
What's the difference between margins in sweetener and ethanol?
Ethanol margins, very tenuous. Sweetener business for high fructose type products tends to be contracted out on much lengthier terms. That business is still pretty good. In fact, demand, especially demand out of the country, has been excellent for sweetener this summer. You know, year-to-year demand here in the United States for some of the sweetener products has been in a slow decline.
Why have the exports been so good for sweetener?
Mexico demand, and also I think in the Philippines and some places. You know, this global sugar market that peaked several months ago, and then that thing's still kind of working itself out there.
Well, let's ask the real question. How high can corn and beans go?
Well, I certainly think that the December 11 contract on corn has a big job to do to get these extra acres in light of stronger wheat and especially bean values above $10 there. You know, $4.75, $5.25, potentially higher if this wheat problem continues over in the Black Sea area, and they can't get this next crop off to a decent start.
Ray, this is more of a big picture, I guess. We know what ethanol means to the USDA balance sheet at 35% of demand, but speak more specifically to your state. We know that Cedar Rapids is going to have a big expansion coming on here, hopefully this fall, and just what the ethanol market and how that has changed, maybe basis levels or even what the farmer sees compared to just 4 to 5 years ago.
Well, if you went back 10 or 15 years, we used to have a basis spread in this state between the northwestern part of the state and the southeast of 30 to 40 cents, sometimes as much as 50. With these ethanol plants scattered over the northwestern half of the state, basis has really flattened out. It's not unusual for Fort Dodge basis to be even to within 5 cents of Eddyville and clear over in the Sioux City area where there's a strong livestock demand as well as ethanol plants. Sometimes we just see the whole thing go flat across the state. So corn's a little stickier. We used to originate corn pretty easily up north of Des Moines, and you don't do that today. So if you really get in a tough spot on corn supply or you have a major production shortfall, the cost of kind of getting out of that jam is going to be greater in the future as people got used to hauling corn shorter distances to these ethanol plants.
Ray, you got any opinion on the world wheat situation then?
Only that it certainly has shrunk the entire feed grain balance sheet enough that it's changed the picture for everything. We've got a good demand base for everything out there, it appears right now, and how we're going to reallocate the proper number of acres is going to be quite interesting. I do agree that as we approach 450, that people need to be looking at some strategies, I guess, friendly enough to the market that rather than making outright sales, I'm probably more interested in some sort of a floor or put strategy to put in place here as we go through the winter.
Ray, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much.
Ray Jenkins is with Cargill in Eddyville, Iowa. Time now for a final word from our panelists in studio. We'll start with you, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Well, this last government report and the weather in Russia has given us a real opportunity to move prices or move puts up here, and I think it's time to look very, very carefully at adding a little coverage.
Aaron Curtis of Midco out of Bloomington, Illinois.
Well, just be prepared to expect anything, but I agree with Wayne. You got to continue to reward this market, and especially as we continue to move higher. Be prepared to reward the market and get some stuff locked in.
And Kurt Kimball of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois.
Bulls make money, bears make money, pigs get slaughtered.
Okay, that is this August 13th edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. You can always hear it anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. Just roll about halfway down the page and hit the link for Commodity Week.